I'm doing another podcast all about weed with him, Alex Greenfield, who's the head writer of WWE. Fucking Hart. What's his name? Teddy Hart.
Oh, okay.
Teddy Hart wants to call in too. So it's going to be a, I'm doing a documentary about medical marijuana that's coming out soon. So
we
I'm
going to ask
you. Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
I don't mean to cover the question.
No problem.
We good?
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, the date is Wednesday, July 2nd. We are here at Morgan's Pier in Philadelphia. It's soaked. You don't have a visual, but it's wet. It's
crazy wet.
Lightning, whatever. And we are here with Damien from Fucked Up.
Hey, thank you for having me.
And the Radio Pirate's here. He's going to help me out, too.
Hello.
All right. So, we'll dive right into it. With the new album, Glass Boys, in stores now, you originally had the idea to have a double album.
Yes.
And then ultimately, it was decided to have it a little shorter.
Yeah.
But one thing I noticed with the sequencing, a lot of the first half of it seems to be a lot of mic-centered.
Yeah.
And the second half seems to be you. Was that conscious?
I think, like, originally the plan I wanted was Mike and I to each have a side. Originally, it was each of us have an LP.
Yeah.
But definitely each of us have a side. And then I think just kind of like laying out the songs, they fit together pretty much like that. But there were a couple songs where like tonally, because it actually made sense that it was kind of a concept record in the end, inadvertently. Well, I wanted it that way, but Mike definitely inadvertently. So, you know, just by placing songs a little differently, we could have some sort of little narrative that almost flows through the record about becoming the Glass Boys, I guess. To trademark our titular tag team wrestling name from now on.
Ooh, yeah, very fragile, though. I don't know.
That's well, that's the thing, right? But we're heels. The Glass Boys, how do they keep winning? They're so fragile.
One punch, they should just be broken.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Oh, these Glass Boys.
All right. So the idea was originally to have a lot of angry stuff, but the album turned out to be very reflective.
Yeah.
And
okay.
Yeah.
So I was reading really far into the lyrics, and I probably misinterpreted a bunch of shit. But I kind of got this vibe when I was listening to it the other night again. You know, that there's a lot about getting older and a scene that keeps getting younger.
Yeah.
Is that correct? Do I get that vibe correctly?
I don't know if the scene keeps getting younger. I think it's about just getting older and having to, like, realizing that more and more all these things that you're like, it'll never happen to me, happen to you. You know, like, the burden of nostalgia, like getting to a point where people are drawing influence from bands that you saw around while they were happening. You're like, no, they weren't good. Like, why do you like them? They were terrible. And then, like, you know, but that's just part of it, you know, part of getting older, you know. Like, I was talking to actually a friend of mine just before, and it's like, now I know what it was like when I was going up to people and being like, Turning Point's better than Youth of Today. And people be like, you're fucking insane. I was there. They weren't that good. And I'm like, no, they're better. They're better. And it's just because it's hard to see the forest through the trees when you're, you know, in the moment. But yeah, like, I think, I don't know if the scene necessarily that's getting younger so much as a scene that will constantly be what it is, and you're just getting older, so you're growing a distance from it, you know? Like, I think it's like about losing hold of, you know, not just like a tangible music scene, but also like sort of this youth that you once had, and like sort of that, you know, the youthful energy that you can never get back.
Dude, that's the reason why I asked that. I'm turning 29 next week.
Oh,
almost
happy
30.
Birthday.
So it's like, it's one of those things, like, it really, my interpretation of the record, it really reflected on what I'm kind of thinking about when I go to shows and stuff and our local scene in the Lehigh Valley and stuff. So,
well, yeah, because you hit a point where it's like, what do you do as an older person? You know, like, this is if you still love this music, you know, which is, you know, you do, right? Like, unless you're never liked it to begin with, but like, if you still love this music, you got to find a way to, like, find a place in it still as an older, you know, adult that you were, you know, when you were a kid in the same place, you know? Like, a lot of people just grow up and, quote-unquote, grow up and move on and just don't care anymore and listen to other stuff and just doesn't mean as much to them. But if you're unable to do that, it's rough, you know? Hey, you guys were sick.
It was fucking awesome. You guys. It was heavy as shit. It was awesome.
Yeah, nice set, man.
But, like, sorry if I swore a little bit. I just think it, like, you know, like, it is, you're right. Like, it is about hitting that age where all of a sudden you're, like, you're no longer, you know, the crux of the scene. You know, you're becoming part of, like, the auxiliary.
Right.
It was a B-side we did for the record that was supposed to be on the LP, which would have made it a double LP if we had kept these two B-sides on. But it was one of the songs that kind of cut off, and I wrote the lyrics about how, you know, eventually the vanguard has to become the rear flank, you know? Like, you can't... It would be wrong to try and always be the vanguard. It doesn't mean you still don't have valid opinions and can't be, you know, contributing, but it's just like you're no longer the driving force in the same way that you once were. You know, but that being said, life began for me at 30, you know? That's when I had my first kid and, you know, everything, like, you know, 29, 30. It's all up from here.
Good to hear. Thank you for the encouragement.
No, like 28 is when fucked up went full time.
Yeah.
You know? Good thing we're not going out live, because I guess we didn't edit the name. Sorry.
No problem.
We're on the internet.
Oh, okay, go. Perfect.
So, it's 90.3. Yes.
So one last question about the lyrics, at least, because I was looking at this.
I love lyric questions.
Glassful is the last track on the record, the title track. I almost took that as either a signal that this may be the end of Fucked Up or the new beginning of Fucked Up. Is there any...
Yeah, like, it's definitely... I don't know. I think I look at every... I want... I come out of every record, going to every record, thinking this is the last one you're ever going to make. Just because you wanted, like... You don't want to leave anything out there that you could have done or could have left, you know, could have had said or put it out there on a record. And I think definitely with Glass Boys, there was stuff that I really wanted, like, for the record, let this stand. You know, and now it's just like, I think that song is, it's definitely, it's a Mike song, so I worry it's Mike writing it as me, is what my big paranoia about that song. It's like Mike being like, oh, Damien's the glass boy, he's a fragile one, and this is me finding voice to him through these lyrics. But, or lending voice to him through these lyrics. But I think, I don't know, I think like for us it's like, you never know what happens, you know? Like, you never know what happens beyond this. I know, you know, we all have, you know, not all of us, but a lot of us in this band now have families, and you kind of want to spend time with them. And you also just don't want to stay out there too long, you know? Like, you want to, like, find a way to exit gracefully. I'm not saying this is the exit, you know? It's just like, yeah, no, every record I end kind of like, well, that's it. Who knows what's going to happen after we're done touring this? Who knows? And it's like, and it really, with Last Boys, it took... It took, like, going to this Canadian music industry event and being like, I fucking don't like this here. I never wanted to be a part of this world. And being like, I definitely have drunk the Kool-Aid and become kind of part of this world. And I wanted to put out another statement, you know, felt the urgency to put out that other last statement of, like, yo, just so you know, I realize how silly some of the decisions that have been made are, but here's why. And that's kind of like the... That was the genesis, I think, for, like, a lot of the early songs for me, like Paper the House and Art of the Patrons. And
those are my two favorite tracks.
Really?
Yep.
Bam, two Damien classics. No, just kidding. That's awesome, though. Really, thank you. Yeah, no, and those songs were, like, that's the first two kind of, like, songs that I wrote. And
I think they're the most emotional.
Yeah, definitely. Least. And I think that came out of, like, a really... I was cracking up, you know. I would call Josh being like, I don't want to make this record. Let's just break up before we make this record. And then, you know, by the time I kind of got into writing the songs, like, they just started coming, like, really quickly, you know. Like, by the end, by the time we're writing some of the last couple B-side tracks that we had left off the record, like, not songs that were supposed to be on the record, just, like, other B-side stuff. It was just like, I'm like, send me another one. I'm done. Can I do this one? Like, but at first it was like pulling teeth. I was like, I cannot do this. I called Josh and had a freak out on the phone. Like, I don't want to do this record. I don't want to do another fucking record. And then it was just like, I don't know, it felt very cathartic at various points, you know, to kind of say things that I'd been thinking about for a long time. And, you know, and addressing things that I wanted to address, you know, like, and now I feel that those things have been addressed. So if it is the last record, it's like, go in peace.
How are we on time, by the way, real quick? I don't want to talk.
Until Jonah comes back and gets changed, we have nothing to worry about.
Okay. All right.
Let's get to the next question.
Yeah. That's cool. All right. So, from what I've read, you've often been a little disappointed with the final product, with maybe some compromises or whatever, in hindsight. But now, with Glass Boys, that you're the happiest with it that you've been with any album.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I think so with Glass Boys, because it's like, this is the first time that we took, well, at least on my end, I was able to take time to do it. I think Dave Comes to Life, you know, I did a lot of stuff in New York. There were so many songs. By the end of it, it was just like so many songs. And I was just like checking out with Mike being like, I can't do this. Like, if you look at the last half of Dave Comes to Life, I think I wrote like two or three songs on the last side of that record, or one song on the last side of the record. if that even. So I think this time, and sorry, before that, Chemistry of Common Life, I still had, you know, we still had other jobs. Hidden World, we still had other jobs. So it was kind of like being done in between work shifts a lot of times. Whereas this time, I could take time and be like, all right, here's how I want the vocals to sound. I don't want to go back and be like, ugh, I hate the way I pronounce that word. Like, there's definitely points on, like, other records where I listen to those songs and I'm like, oh my god, if I could say that again. I remember hearing, like, John Lydon do an interview where he's talking about he hates his pronunciation of anarchy on, you know,
anarchy.
It's the forced half rhyme. But I'm like, you know, like, I'm not saying that we did anything on anything close to what the Sex Pistols did, but I think at the same time, I'm like, I remember listening to that being like, I can't relate to that at all, but now I'm like, well, I can definitely relate to that. Like, going back and being like, ooh, to only be able to rephrase that one line. But this time with Glass Boys, I kind of think I phrased it all how I want to phrase it. You know, I'll see next year when I'm listening to it, being like, oh, I wish I could change that, I wish I could change this. But, like, right now, I'm like, there's nothing I would have changed, you know? I would have made it a double LP, so I would have kept those other two songs on.
Well, we'll get to them, though. Yeah. All right. So, you utilized George from Alexis on Fire in background vocals. And now, previously, you'd used Dallas. Is Wade up next, maybe, someday?
Wade's a homie, and, like, I love Wade to death. And, like, yeah, there's, like, a... I don't know, it's weird. Like, I'll write a song, and if I hear... I'll hear someone else's voice on it, and, like... You know, just ask them if they want to do it. And with George, he actually sang on Hidden World too, and so he's actually the first person I think we've ever had come back to do vocals twice. But I just wrote that song, and I could hear me and George going at the same time, and I'm like, I think that sounds really cool. So I hit him up, and at the time he was like retired from music, like he had just done those last Alexis on Fire shows, was doing like his firefighter training placement stuff, and now he's got a new band, Dead Tire, that's going to be unbelievable. But at the time he was like retired from music, and I'm like, do you want to come out of retirement and do this? And he's like, yeah. And he came out, he's like, it's weird, I feel rusty and going to the studio. But I just think, like, yeah, like Wade is definitely someone that would be awesome to do something with in the future. We've toured with Gallows and, you know, done shows with Lex on Fire, obviously tour with Black Lungs too and stuff. So yeah, Wade's a tight bro. And like, yeah, like it's as soon as that song comes, I definitely would love to do something with him.
Now, this one goes way back. Speaking of background vocals, on Hidden World, you ended the songs with the track Vivian Girls.
Yeah.
Now, on Chemistry of Common Life, you had Katie, Cassie, and Frankie helping out on background vocals.
Yeah.
Well, come on, what's up with that?
They deny that it was any influence on them, the name. But, I don't know, I beg to differ. No, I'm just kidding. No, they said no. I'm like, hey, you get the name from a Hidden World song? They're like, no, not at all. Harry Darger and stuff. So, I don't know. I believe them. I believe them on it, too. But it's funny. I have, an old screensaver shot of us playing a show, and there's a crowd shot, and I'm, like, looking at it the other day, and I'm like, holy shit, there's Katie. You know, like, back at the show, back in the day, like, you know, repping hard, so... You know, down for life hardcore kids. So, I love Vivian Girls. Rest in peace to that band. But all of them have gone. Allie, Cassie, and Katie have all gone on to do other awesome things too. So,
Lacero's awesome. That new album's good.
Absolutely. And we were huge fans of them as a band. Like, I think their first 7-inch had just come out. We had, like, an idea to do vocals, like, very Manson-esque, Charles Manson kind of backing vocals. Got them to record some vocals in New York. Like, this very early on when we were trying to figure out how to have guests on a record and stuff, and, like, sorted it out and had them on the record, and it turned out pretty cool. And, like, yeah, something, like, I look back, and there's so many bands that I've gotten to work with, and it's like, wow, that's kind of like, you know, at the end of the day, that's been, like, the ultimate kind of big thrill, I think, is the collaboration side of being in this band.
So I'm going to condense some of my questions because I want to make sure we get to the good stuff here, and you guys got to play soon.
But continue after.
Okay. So I saw online today you're doing mixtape 5. What's going to be on that?
A lot of stuff, like weird clips of interviews we've done, me interviewing other bands. There's going to be, like, weird B-sides, weird other edits of songs. We did, like, a lot of different versions, vocal versions. I recorded entire demos for the first 3 or 4 songs at Vapor Central, a marijuana bar, vaporizer bar in Toronto. You have to bring your own. You can't buy it there or anything. But, like, we rented out their storage room and did vocals there. for some demos. So I think one of those is winding up on it. It's always just been a fun way to kind of put out a bunch of stuff that would be, you know, you can't really put it on a record, but, you know, it belongs on a mixtape, you know? It's like when you made a mixtape for people and you'd throw on, like, weird samples. Like, you'd be like, oh, here's a sample from this E.T. tape that I have. Here's a sample from this G.I. Joe cassette that I have. You put it on before you put on, like, a Rorschach song or something, you know? And it's just like, you know, it's hopefully finding that, but it's like the weird things are like Liam Gallagher asking me what fucked up sounds like or something like that. You know, just like a lot of weird shit like that on there.
So, obviously, you know, smoking pot, you're cool with that.
Yeah.
Anxiety's been a big thing for you. I've struggled since middle school myself. Yeah. There was a period I smoked a lot. It really helped. There was a period I stopped for a while. When I started smoking again, it made things a lot worse.
Yeah, that's right here.
So I wanted to get your thoughts on that. And funny thing is, to mention this, now I'm a family therapist.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah.
I think marijuana, it's like any drug. You know, everyone has different reactions to it. And your reactions to any drug can change over time, you know. And, like, for me, cannabis just works, you know. And I've never found anything that works like it for me. I'm not going to say, like, stop taking your pills to people, right, and be like, smoke weed, because, like, you never know, right? But by the same, you know, Prozac makes people kill themselves sometimes, you know? Like there's certain things that...
to bring to Europe. It's in the card bag.
Sorry. There's certain things that just...
to Europe.
There's certain things that just, like, you never know your reaction to the drug until you try it. And, like, weed was something I had no comprehension of until I came to it later in life. I tried it as a kid. And then, like, but I never really took it very seriously. Certainly never looked at it in any sort of medicinal kind of way until, you know, 3 years ago when I started smoking it. But, yeah, like, I just think, like, you know, you change. Obviously, you probably know way more than I do about this sort of stuff. But, like, your brain changes over time and your relationship to things change. I look at, like, any drug. Every drug is kind of the same thing, you know. Like, you can have, well... Maybe there's not. I don't really know anyone that's had a lot of positive long-term experiences with opiates. But apart from that, like most drugs, there are medicinal benefits of it. Eye drops have cocaine in them sometimes, right? Like there's like, there are ecstasy they find medicinal uses for in treating some people. I don't want to try that. Weed is what I use. But like, but yeah, but I think it's just like, I think we in a society tend to have to find certain drugs as good drugs and other drugs as bad drugs, when I think ultimately drugs are drugs and all of them have really positive and definitely in a lot of cases incredibly negative aspects to them. And for me, I haven't found the negative aspects personally for me for weed, other than price and availability sometimes are the two most negative side effects I've encountered from weed. But apart from that, I haven't really encountered like the sexual side effects that I had from Prozac and Paxil, or the, you know, weird, I don't want to talk, it's weird because I don't want to talk about the weight loss stuff, like, it's almost like the weight loss stuff, I've lost a lot of weight recently, but that's almost like a side effect from the weed, like, I never wanted to lose weight, but it's like, now I look back on it, and we would stop, and I would just drink so much fucking soda, eat so much food, I still eat gross food, like, I haven't changed the way I eat, I just don't feel compelled to eat as much of it in the same sort of way. And I look back and I'm like, oh shit, that's a side effect from a lot of these pills, is making you want to eat a lot. And it's just like, I haven't found those same sort of negative side effects of weed. Sorry. I ramble when I get on the topic of weed sometimes.
Okay. My last two questions. Wrestling right now, who is your favorite?
Kevin Steen in ROH is someone I think is like just like a really phenomenal talent, and I'm like, I was really privileged to get to see him when he won the ROH title from Davey Richards in Toronto at Border Wars, and it was like, I've been to a lot of concerts and had a lot of amazing experiences at concerts. I've never felt a room with that kind of energy in my life, and so Kevin Steen is right up there. Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson. Yeah. Used to use fucked up his entrance music for two shows. Nice. So we're a footnote in history.
Nice.
But he's like, you know, super talented. Yeah. Dean Ambrose, obviously.
I'm pissed the Shield broke up.
Yeah, I'm pissed the Shield broke up, but I think it's now three potentially really interesting talents.
Yes.
But then I think Red Dragon is my favorite tag team in wrestling in ROH. Like, I don't know, Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish, like the facial expressions and the way they go to the ring. Facial expressions in the ring, everything about the gimmick I just think is just so awesome, and just like, it just brings me so much joy to watch them wrestle right now. So they're probably my favorites going right now. I know I'm forgetting, like, you know, obviously there's like Kenta, and like there's, you know, like Okada and like Tanahashi, all New Japan stuff. Devitt, wherever he winds up, is going to be incredibly well served by having him there. We talk wrestling all night. Oh my God,
love wrestling.
I love it.
So my last question, he's got one more for you. I do the new music show on the station. Anything that my listeners should be listening to that they're not?
I think Good Throb from London is a really incredible band. They put out an LP recently that's phenomenal. I thought this woman I know, Bryony, sang in it, but it turns out she doesn't sing. She just plays guitar in it or something. But whoever sings in it has one of my favorite vocals I've ever heard. Like, her voice is just fucking awesome. Like, it's just like...
I'll check it out.
Such a raging voice. I'm trying to think of other bands I'm really into right now. Lower. We just went on tour with Lower, and I think their new record's really killer. Weed, who we're playing with tomorrow, is really...
They played it in Bethlehem at the Art Space in the Lehigh Valley, outside of Allentown.
Oh,
yeah,
awesome.
I saw them last summer.
They're sick.
Basement show, yeah, they were
really
great.
Sick. Vancouver has, like, a lot of shit just coming out of there. New Sensei, obviously White Lung's blowing up. But there's a lot of cool stuff out of Vancouver. And it's, like, a really small city when you get down to it. England, Violent Reaction from England. There's tons of stuff. I'm sorry, I'm just like, shit. It's really fucking awesome from Toronto. They're an incredible band. S period, H period, I period, T period. In case there's another band with that moniker that's not very good and is actually literally kind of shit. But they are shit from Toronto. Killer. God, I know there's tons of bands I forget that I'm just going to be kicking myself for not mentioning. The new Cam'ron record. Dipshits, that song is one of the best songs. I've never understood people that root for sports teams, because I'm just like, oh, it's just a bunch of millionaires I have nothing in common with. But I think I cheer for Cam'ron in the same way people cheer for a sports team. Like, I know he's someone that I have nothing in common with, but I want him to win for some reason, you know?
I get it.
And I always end with this one. You're stuck in a desert island, one album, rest of your life.
It would probably be Rocky Erickson's Evil One or Feeder's Ever Feel Like Killing Your Boss. I think both those records have a lot of depth to them. Integrity, Season of the Size of Days, too, would be there. But I guess, man. I'm going to say The Smog, Cold-Blooded Old Times, 4-song EP. It has a version of Chosen One and a version of Wild Horse. Chosen One. And I can't remember the other song on it. Wild Horse on a Collision Course. No, that's Chosen One. I can't remember the other song, but it's two amazing songs by Jim O'Rourke, Smog. But it's got Jim O'Rourke's playing piano, sorry, for Smog on him. Two of the best songs ever recorded. It's like... it's mind-blowing how good it is. Mind-blowing.
The good news is you're not going to have to worry about the desert island things.
Well, who knows? Who knows how I'm going to wind up, unfortunately, if we don't break up this band.
Oh, whoa.
Landing on an island. Might be all stuck in that only that Smog EP. Miss my kids. Got to stop touring.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right.